Yeah. Good. So here Jesus says, I am the good shepherd, and I'll lay down my life for the sheep. I love these sheep. You know, there are wolves out there who don't care about the sheep, you know, but I will lay down my life for them. So is the love for this person. So Richard Baxter, who wrote a pretty famous work called The Reformed Pastor, but it extends to all those who would hold the office of elder, says the whole of our ministry must be carried out in tender love for our people. We must let them see that nothing pleases us but what profits them, and that what does them good does us good. And nothing troubles us more than their hurt. You know, that kind of heart for the people. This is the qualities that we want to see in those that are called to serve in this way in Christ Church. Now, this is why Paul says, right, in 2 Corinthians, who of us is sufficient for these things? Because right there, I mean, we feel like there's no way that I could ever be that kind of person who is consumed by a love for Christ, who is consumed by the cause of Christ, and consumed by a love for Christ's person. But that always brings us back to the gospel. So our leaders, our elders, have to first of all be gospel saturated, you know, and know that we are loved, and it's not because of us. And of course we fall short in all of these things, which makes us run to Christ quicker. And I think that's one of the things that really characterizes, and we talked about this last week, right, where we talked about the depth of the gospel that characterizes us. Elders, those of us who lead in our homes, in our businesses, you know, we have to be, one of the primary things that we do is we're the chief repenters. We're the chief returners to the cross, right? We're the chief ones who hope in the finished work of Christ, the empty tomb. So that's the heart of a leader. So let's look at this office of elder. Just a word about that. You know, we're gonna look at sort of the description of that. I think many of you know that Christ Church belongs to the PCA. And we are a complementarian denomination. For those of you who aren't familiar with that term, there's a couple of terms that get floated around in these circles. There's complementarian, and there's egalitarian. And this has to do with the relationship between men and women in roles as it comes to serving primarily in the church and in the home. Complementarians look at God's created order, and they say there was an order to how God created humanity. There was a priority. There was a role that was given to men in that place to do things like name animals, to name Eve. You know, there were different things that indicate that all the way back into Genesis 2. Has nothing to do with equality. This is not, you know, one over the other. You know, we see in Genesis 1:26, male and female, he created them. So it has nothing to do with, you know, men are better or even better equipped to carry out some of these roles. It's simply, you know, an assigning of roles. The key thing, we see that in Genesis 1 and Genesis 2, what's really important, well, who can tell me, what's important about the fact that we find this in Genesis 1 and Genesis 2? Yeah, it's before the fall, which happens in Genesis 3. So we look back on those chapters, Genesis 1 and 2, for foundation for a lot of things. You know, we look at, you know, the foundation of work. You know, Adam worked in the garden. He tended it and kept it. before the fall. And so we say, you know, work is a good thing. It's part of what it means to be human, is that we would work. And so, you know, our vocational lunch this Friday, you know, how do we talk about that? What do we, how do we live out our humanity as we play that? We see creation care in Genesis 1 and 2, and we say this is a good thing. You know, this is part of who we are as humans. But then we also see this complementarian principle. In the New Testament, we see various ways that this is played out. There are some folks that don't adhere to this in the same way, and they would say, you know, God did away with that in New Testament Christianity. And so they would point to passages like where Paul says, there is now neither male nor female, slave nor free, Jew or Gentile in the kingdom of God, saying that, you know, that was done away with, that distinction between males and females. I would struggle with that in a couple of different ways, because we see a number of other times where Paul and others clearly talk about sort of a role relationship in the church. And every time that that's talked about, it goes back to creation. For Adam was created first, then Eve. For Adam, you know, Eve was created and given to Adam. There's these various things. It always goes back to creation. And then the other thing is, you know, in that particular passage where, you know, neither male nor female, slave nor free, Paul isn't talking about roles within the church. What he's talking about is our approach to Christ and in the salvation that is offered in the gospel. Some of you know that the Pharisees of the day, and I don't mean this in sort of, you know, often the way that we use Pharisees, you know, like they're hypocritical, but they had a prayer where they actually said, I thank you that I am not a female, I thank you that I'm not a Gentile, and I thank you that I am not a slave. Their conception was to be born a male in Israel was the greatest blessing. So it wasn't necessarily a negative prayer. I mean, we hear that, and it's like, oh, my word, that's just terrible, right? Culturally, though, it wasn't that bad. But what it gives you is a sense of how they saw the world ordered with regards to their access to God. And what Paul is saying here is he takes on those three things, and he says, in terms of your access to God, none of that matters. But that doesn't erase, you know, sort of this role relationship that we see back in creation with regards to men and women. So in the PCA and at Christ Church, we fall in line with this complementarianism. And that's a good thing. I mean, we see, you know, the gender creation, the roles that God, again, all the way back to Genesis 1 and 2, as being a real gift and a real blessing, something for us to push into. Again, this is a hot topic, you know, not only in terms of roles and leadership and that kind of thing, but just gender overall. And you know, the distinctions between male and female, he created them. So this all goes back there. So as we talk about these things, you know, we would say these are then roles in the church that are given to men, and women are exempted from them. Certainly doesn't mean that they're not qualified. Certainly doesn't mean that in many cases probably could do it better than men. But it just says in this particular role, you are exempted. And the men have the responsibility to do this. Some of this, you know, my own speculation, this is opinion, maybe borne out by fact. What would you say was Adam's sin in the garden? Silence. You know, there's even a title of a book, right? The Silence of Adam. You know, Adam really abdicated his leadership responsibility. The serpent came, tempted Eve, were told that Adam was there giving his consent. You know, he, and it just seems to me that so often, you know, when given the opportunity, men often go in that direction, you know, of abdication. And I wonder if in God's wisdom, he didn't realize, like, you know, this is going to be a problem, you know, and so we're going to exempt women from this so that the men have to step up and to serve in this way. Now, you cannot find chapter and verse on that. That is not prophetic word, you know. I'm not speaking ex cathedra here. But there's something to the natural reticence. And I, you know, anecdotally, I look around at some denominations that have, you know, more of an egalitarian position, and sadly, I see the men out of that. We see that, you know, more and more it's women that step forward, and that's not a negative on women. That is just simply something for us to consider. Anybody want to have any questions or comments on that? I think many of you, I mean, I look around. I know most of you know where we come from on that. We've done conferences on this, but I just want to make sure that we're all playing on the same sheet of music here. So let's look at the key terms from the, anytime you want to ask, please do. And I will say, incidentally, I've been encouraged recently, you know, as a denomination, I think that there is, you know, there are ways that has been over-applied in sometimes in really harmful ways, this idea of complementarianism, where, you know, this idea of headship had very little to do with service and had a lot to do with authority, and it's been over-applied in really harmful ways that way. It's been over-applied in terms of just general leadership. You know, here we're talking specifically about offices, but that doesn't mean in other ways, in music and in missions and in, you know, all sorts of other ways that we need to be fostering and encouraging the gifts of the women among us. And, you know, these are things that are tough to wrestle with, right? Especially if you've grown up in that, you know, you sort of fall into modes of doing things, and if you are, if you feel like, well, we could be going down a slippery slope, or, you know, any of these other things, just been really encouraged that, you know, the denomination has been really wrestling with that, has had some, you know, really listen to the voices of women within the denomination who are very happy to be within a complementarian system, but have some great ideas how we can do a better job of continuing to foster those things. There was a report, a denominational report that came out a couple of years ago. You can find it if you search our PCA.net or PCANet.org website, or if you have any questions, just ask me about that. So I'm really encouraged by that and grateful to be in a place where a lot of those things were already in place. And so I hope that we continue to press into that. So key terms. Elder. What do you know about the term elder? We are Christ Church, a Presbyterian Church of America. So presbyteros is the Greek term for elder. That's where we get this, elder rule. We get the term Presbyterian. It can be used, you see there on your sheet, either to refer to the office of elders, as it does in Acts 14:23, or simply to an older, mature man. You see that in a couple of other places. The emphasis of the word is on the maturity or wisdom that comes from age and experience. Elders play an important role in the life of Israel in the Old Testament. We're going to see that later on. The guy that we met today in Exodus 2, Reuel, or as his name is later, Jethro, he plays an important role in Exodus 18 when he gives wisdom to Moses and helps him in judging and ruling the people sufficiently. But we see this in all sorts of ways in the Old Testament. They were active during the time of Moses. during the monarchy, the prophets, the restoration, all of these things. During the intertestamental period with the establishment of the synagogue, elders came to have an increasingly visible, important role in society. These were the folks that made up the Sanhedrin, the Pharisees, the Sadducees. These were people who were considered wise in the church. The term elder is used predominantly in the Old Testament as a designation for an official community leader, like a judge, officer, prince, or priest. They clearly represent a distinct governing body of men with political with certain political and religious functions, not merely older men. Since the New Testament church was largely Jewish in origins, it's natural that the concept of elder was adopted for use in the church. Presbyteros is used nearly 20 times in the New Testament to refer to a unique group of leaders in the church. They were the mature spiritual leaders given the responsibility for the church. And there's a number of places where you see that. When used as a technical term for leaders in the church, the word elder or presbyteros lays stress on a man's character, his maturity, and his wisdom. So that's what we're thinking of. The reason why we're called a Presbyterian church is because it's elder rule, which has to speak to the church structure. We use that word rule, and I maybe need to, I think we have ruling elders and teaching elders, and sometimes, you know, I can hear how that could be misinterpreted. You know, it's elder-led. It's, the elders lead by serving. So if I say rule, please don't hear authoritative with regards to that. And don't think of guys like Ken or Mike Wilbraham who are ruling elders as being overly authoritative. I mean, their heart is to serve with regards to Christ and his church and his kingdom. Second term that we come up against a lot in the New Testament with regards to the office is the term episkopos. You hear in that, you know, Episcopalians, right? And they have bishops. So you see some of these terms that are used here kind of breaking out into different ecclesiologies. So the Episcopalians have a real hierarchical system, the Catholic Church, where you have sort of folks at this level who might be pastors, we'll come to that term in a minute, or who might be elders, and then you have folks at this level that might be episkopos or rulers. This is more of a secular Greek culture equivalent to the historic idea of ideas. It's the secular Greeks culture equivalent to the Hebrew idea of elders. And so it suggested two ideas to the first century Greek mind: responsibility to a superior power and an introduction of the new order of things. Gentile converts would immediately understood those concepts in the term. As the church began to lose its solely Jewish identity due to the inclusion of Gentile believers, the term episkopos might become a more common word with reference to leadership in the church. So we see that in 1 Timothy 3 and 1, or 3, 1 and 2. And there, episkopos and presbyteros are used interchangeably. So that's one of the reasons why we in the Presbyterian system don't see a distinction between those, is because, you know, they're different words that describe the same person and doing the same task. So presbyteros emphasizes the character of the leader. Episkopos functions the... Man, I'm really messing up. Stresses the function of the leader. He's to oversee the church by feeding, guarding, and caring for it. The two terms, like I said, refer to the same group of leaders, but they maybe are emphasizing a slightly different sense or nuance in terms of the task. Any thoughts or questions to date? One more term, and that is poimen, or pastor, which is often translated shepherd. This word is used several times in the New Testament. Hebrews 4:11 is the only place that it is translated as pastors. So that's the passage where he says he's given some to be apostles, some to be something else, and some to be pastors, right? And so that's the word poimen at that point. Other places, it's translated as shepherds. That's partially because there is the difference between the noun form and the verb form. So we see this then, the picture of really what a person, his attitude toward the church. Jesus is frequently referred to as the shepherd or the pastor of the church. We just read a passage, John 10, where you see that. 1 Peter 2, return to the shepherd and overseer of your souls, has that section. When used of human leaders in the church, it stresses the role of the leaders in caring for and feeding the flock of Christ. Acts 20 is where Paul interacts with the Ephesian believers, and he charges the elders at that point to shepherd those whom Christ shed his blood for, right? Ephesians 4:11, we already referred to that. 1 Peter 5, 1-4, why don't we read that one? This is a key passage, a non-Pauline passage on the eldership. But do you have that quickly?
So I exhort the elders among you, as a fellow elder and a witness of the sufferings of Christ, as well as a partaker in the glory that is going to be revealed. Shepherd the flock of God that is among you. Exercise your oversight, not under compulsion, but willingly, as God would have you. Not for shameful gain, but eagerly, not domineering over those in your charge, but being an example to the flock. And when the chief shepherd appears, he will receive the unfading crown of glory. Likewise, you who are younger, be subject to the elders. Clothe yourselves, all of you, with humility toward one another, for God opposes the proud, but gives grace to the humble.
Good. Thank you for reading that. What did you notice in there with regards to our three words? Presbyteros, episkopos, poimen. Did you pick up, I mean, all three of them are used there, right? You know, there's the elders, the presbyteros, give oversight, episkopos, and shepherd, poimen. So we're talking about one class of people, right, when it comes to these different things. And you could divide it out a little bit like we have it at the page there where it says the elder, the presbyteros, speaks to the person's character, the overseer speaks to their function, and the pastor shepherd speaks to their attitude or maybe even how they go about it and the ways that they carry out the tasks that are above them. So we need to have this full-orbed view of the role of the elder within the congregation. You know, sometimes we talk about a ruling elder and we maybe only think about their function in terms of episkopos and the bishop, but you know, we also have to think about it in terms of pastor shepherd, and then we also have to think about it in terms of their wisdom and character and some of those things. So thoughts or questions on that? Is that helpful to take a look at those words and put them together? Yeah, Dan. Yeah. Yes.
Elders covering sin.
Yep.
Oh,
man.
Yeah. Anyways, there's a lot of case studies on that. But
yeah.
How do you think culturally a church, whether it's Christ Church specifically or in general, helps to avoid, because the passage in 1 Peter, you can tell he's anticipating Peter's anticipating some of those issues.
Yes. Right. Yes. Yep. Yep. Anybody want to take a stab? Yeah, Ruthanna. Okay, that's good. So Ruthanna said the importance of having more than one. There's, you see that next section, you know, is on the plurality of elders. I don't know that we're going to have time to go through that in detail today, but that's really key. You know, I mean, I'm subject to all my brothers, and I'm so grateful for that. I'm so grateful because there are times when I don't know what the heck to do, you know, and I'm like, you guys, you know, this is, I need, you know, we need wisdom, collective wisdom, so that's really important. What other things are important? What's that? Yeah, yeah, accountability within the plurality, accountability. Within the congregation, I think if we see that, like, we're a role relationship within equals, you know, really listening. If elders are herding the sheep, you know, we need to listen. We need to hear the bleeding, right? And that's why, you know, really I emphasized last week the importance of the gospel and leadership. Here's the thing. I know, I can tell you some very specific ways that I have hurt people as a leader. It's going to happen. It's going to happen. And that's why we have to live in the truths of the gospel. We have to live by being the first repenters. We have to live by saying, I'm sure what you're saying is true, and it's probably even a lot worse than that. We have to live within this context of giving and receiving grace, you know, and having accountability. So I don't think we can avoid it altogether, but can we build a gospel context so that we keep short accounts and that we can, you know, move back and forth with that? It seems to me one of the important ways in terms of going forward. Yeah, Mike? Yeah. Yes. Oh, yeah. Yes. Yep. Yep. Yeah, and that is a good thing. I mean, that's one of the things I love about our structure. My best friend is a pastor's in a non-denominational church, and there are many, many strengths. I love this brother. I love what their church is doing. But, you know, there are stories that he shares with me that, you know, that stuff just would never happen in a PCA church, you know. And that, again, we got all kinds of problems. I mean, we're not immune from any of that. But I'm grateful for, you know, the structure of accountability, both locally as well as up the ladder as well, so to speak. It's good. That's good. So you have that there, some important relationships with other elders, pastor designations within the office. This is the difference between teaching elders and ruling elders. Teaching elders are those called by God to give their entire lives to ministry, earn their living in this way. Me, Addison, Daniel, Bryant. Teaching elders would be passionaries. What am I saying today? Pastors, missionaries, ruling elders are called by God to give to the office of elder, but they earn their living in the marketplace. While there's thus a distinction of function, there's an equality of authority and responsibility that are there. And then just finally at the end, the purpose of the office, we may summarize the purpose with the word goes. They guard, they oversee, their example, and their shepherds. So again, what I wanted to do was say, all right, how does the Bible talk about this? What's a full-orbed view of what this role is within a church? And then let's hang on to the grace of God as we go forward with that. All right, we're at the end of the hour, so if you've got kids in Sunday school, go rescue them. If you have questions about any of this, talk to me, Ken, Mike. You know, others of you are wise in these matters as well. So let me ask you a question. For those, I know some of you are here thinking, continuing going on, pursuing LTG. Would you rather do Saturday morning or Wednesday evening? Like for a couple of times over the course of the summer. What's easier for people? So Saturday morning, raise your hand. Like I was thinking earlier, like 8 to 10 type thing. So Wednesday evening, raise your hand. Don't care. Okay. All right. Evenly split. I have no further wisdom on that. Thank you.